Hi everyone, welcome to a new episode of the Who We Are podcast and show. I am so excited for this episode because I got to speak to Robin Sharma, a legendary personal growth expert and best-selling author. Today, we embark on a transformative journey with him as we explore the profound insights in his latest book, The Wealth Money Can't Buy. Throughout this entire episode, we will dive deeper into Robin's insights, research, exploring practical strategies for cultivating a mindset of continuous learning and self-discovery. So, without further ado, let's dive into this enlightening conversation with the one and only Robin Sharma as we uncover the wealth that money can't buy and embark on a journey of growth, transformation, and self-discovery. Robin, thank you so much again for doing this. I'm so excited. I've been following your work since before COVID and really impacted by your teachings, your books, and especially as a leader. I started out really young as an entrepreneur. Back then, I was 18. Back in the days before social media, before entrepreneurship became a buzzword like it is today. And I'm so grateful for thought leaders like yourself that come out so openly and honestly to share about the journey and the lessons. So we're going to dive right into this conversation.
Well, you're very kind, and congratulations on all your success, Rachel.
Oh, thank you so much. I have so much more to learn and so excited to be able to do this with you. I wanted to ask you, you know, Robin, could you share a pivotal moment or experience that inspired your personal journey into this realm of personal development and leadership?
I think one of my greatest influences has been my father. My father is 86 years old. He was a family doctor for 54 years.
Wow.
And he filled our home with personal development books long before personal development books were mainstream. So there was Dale Carnegie and there was Osho, and my father very much lives it as well. So at an early age, I was exposed to the power of working on yourself. It sounds so simple, but your outer life dramatically reflects what's going on inside. And the more we can calibrate and upgrade our inner worlds, the more our businesses or our family life or our impact on the world rises with us.
I love that. And I'm going to touch more about that later, especially when it comes to your upcoming book that you're going to launch. Also knowing, you know, one of the other things that you do is also coaching, and that has also reached a global audience. What common challenges do you observe among individuals striving for personal and professional growth?
Well, it's a great question. So I mentor sports superstars and music legends and billionaire tech titans. And these people, first of all, I learned this from something I read about Roger Federer, and he said the great ones all doubt themselves. The great ones all doubt themselves. So let's not think that the superstars have insecurities. And as a matter of fact, that's often part of their winning formula. They never feel they have reached Mount Everest. So they're always trying to push for more. One of the common challenges is, how do you sustain world class? How do you sustain mastery? So some of these super successful people, they've got the championship ring. And when a human being is successful, they're actually in a very dangerous situation, because it's easy then to start coasting and to fall in love with your winning formula and not to push hard, not to get up early, not to keep on improving your craft. So one of the biggest challenges that these people come to me for mentoring is, how can we not only sustain our success, but optimize it so that they can continue to play at the highest level for many years? Because I believe that the DNA of legendary is longevity. And it's fine to be successful for a year, but the great ones ask themselves, how can I be successful for a lifetime?
And what do you think is the answer to that, like sustained longevity and sustained success?
Well, there's a few things. One of them is, you just can't fall in love with your success. You've always got, the thing about a master is, she always thinks like a beginner. And the moment you, it's very dangerous actually to think you're an expert, because once you think you're an expert, you become complacent. You stop trying to outlearn the competition. You fall in love with your closely cherished beliefs. Oh, I know the truth. Here's how the world works. Well, that's what happened to the people who thought the world was flat. So you've the thing about the great masters always think like beginners. They never lose their white belt mentality.
Yeah.
And it's really about humility. They're humble enough to fail. They're humble enough to listen to other people's opinions. They're humble enough to always be learning. They're humble enough to get up early and outwork the competition. So how do you sustain things? One of the ways is when you become successful, you realize you are in such a dangerous position and you're in a war against complacency.
Wow. And complacency within yourself, right?
That's completely right. It's the war you're facing is within yourself. And that's why I think to live a great life and to be on the path of mastering your business and your career, it's really a series of little deaths. And that's why it's so uncomfortable. It's almost like for the best part of you to show up tomorrow, who you were yesterday must experience a little death. And if you're on this path, right, even in your business, I mean, a business that's on a plateau must have the wisdom and discipline to destroy its winning formula, a little death for the sake of innovation, so you don't become irrelevant. And that's why the path of world class is a dangerous sport. It's not comfortable, but it's beautiful, because it's a great way to spend a life. But it's not comfortable, but it's a great way to live out a life.
Wow. And I love that, right? Because you talk also about the notion of self-mastery, leading ourselves, curiosity, you know, being able to learn, unlearn and relearn. What do you think, or is there one trait that successful people that you've come across have in common?
Oh, there's so many.
Yeah.
A lot of them are members of the 5 a.m. club. I wrote the book of the 5 a.m. Club because it's such a key morning routine.
Mm.
And the Spartan warriors say it so well. They say, sweat more in training and you'll bleed less in war. So giving yourself 1 hour from 5 to 6, I call it in the book the victory hour, and running the 20-20-20 formula that I teach in the book is so powerful. Because then you get up with the sun. Most people are asleep. And you actually make yourself stronger and wiser and more resilient and more creative and healthier and more loving. And of course, that's going to affect the texture of the day. Super successful people also are careless about the opinions of others.
Mm.
So, Rachel, most of us say, oh, here's a new idea for an app. Here's a new idea for a book. Here's a new idea for my love life. Here's a new health idea. And as soon as someone laughs at the idea of fasting or getting up early or whatever it is, we believe their opinion and we don't pursue our commitment.
Mm.
The best of the best are monomaniacally focused on their vision, even and especially when they're called crazy. And they take the stones that critics throw at them and build them into monuments of success and mastery that honor their vision. So that's a second trait of the best of the best. They literally don't care about the chattering voices of the critics. They are so invested and they trust their instinct around their vision. Third thing, it sounds so simple, but most people give up on the first sign of defeat.
Mm.
The best of the best in business and humanities and the arts, even if they don't get any applause, they continue for a lifetime. I think about Vincent van Gogh. He only sold 2 artworks in his lifetime. He died anonymous and poor, but he did it not for the money. He did it for the art.
Wow, that's inspirational. I also wanted to ask, you know, Robin, how do we navigate the fine line between pushing ourselves for growth and at the same time avoiding burnout or overwhelm?
Well, it's actually a brilliant question. And I've never been a subscriber to the hustle and grind culture. Yeah. I think if you look at the most effective entrepreneurs or the most effective athletes or the people who sustain success, these people, they live their life in seasons. And what I mean by that is, you know, and I talked about this model that I teach called the twin cycles of elite performance. So when they work intensely, focused, passionately, like a warrior trying to get the job done. But then they make time for rest and recovery. So each day, have your block of time where you're going to work intensely without distraction, doing real work versus fake work, and then pull back and take the time to meditate, to walk in the woods, to be with your family, to read something wonderful, to take a hot bath, to be alone in solitude. So I think it's really important to balance elite performance with deep recovery. And that's a lot of what the new book that'll be coming out soon is about. The wealth money can't buy. The wealth money can't buy. And I wrote the book because I really believe to tell it like I want to say it, I think the definition of success that's subscribed to by a lot of people is just wrong. Mm-hmm. And I say that respectfully, but it's like our society has taught us wealth and success is about fame, fortune, and applause. We celebrate the billionaire with money in the bank and a huge portfolio,
yeah.
But we don't put the teacher or the gardener or the ski instructor who loves their work and has a great family life on a pedestal. And I think it leaves a lot of us feeling unworthy. Oh, we don't have a billion or a million, but there's a lot of wealth that money can't buy that's hidden at our doorstep that a lot of us don't even see.
Yeah, I am so excited for the book. You know, like you said, right, your latest book coming up is The Wealth Money Can't Buy. And you mentioned earlier also shifting your perspective on the definition of success. What prompted this shift in perspective?
Well, part of it was the struggles of my clients, Rachel, and part of it was my own struggle. You know, society does say you can measure success by money, by social media likes, by material things. And there's nothing wrong with those things. Having said that, I've created a model and I've shared it with my mentoring clients for 15 years, and it's transformed their lives. And the model is called the 8 forms of wealth. The 8 forms of wealth. And I really believe that wealth comes in 8 forms. Money is one form. It's important. It puts food on the family table. It allows us to do wonderful things for our family members. Money allows us to have freedom. We can make choices that are good for us versus choices we're forced to make. But it's only one of the 8 forms of wealth. And so the wealth money can't buy is based on the 8 forms of wealth. And I can walk you through them if it would be interesting to you and your audience.
Yes, that would be great. And, you know, I also want to say, Robin, before we dive into that a little bit deeper with you, you know, to also give the audience a taste of what the book is about. I must say that I really love that the first form of wealth that you wrote in your book was growth. And it's about daily self-improvement as the cornerstone of personal growth. How can we cultivate this mindset of continuous learning and personal development in our lives? And back to your point earlier about, you know, leading ourselves before leading others.
Well, we can cultivate daily personal growth by understanding how truly powerful it is. And by understanding that being on the journey of materializing potential form of wealth. I mean, one of the great secrets of happiness is knowing that we're becoming more of all we're meant to be.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a form of wealth, saying, okay, every day I read, or every day I pray, or every day I meditate, or every day I write in a journal, or I practice gratitude, or I lean into my fears by practicing deliberate discomfort, so I take back more of my power. Well, that's not money in the bank, but it's worth more than money in the bank. Becoming who we're meant to be gives us such confidence. abundance and such joy and psychic serenity. So it's a form of wealth. And how can we practice that every day? Well, just by understanding that it's the first form of wealth. And the people who are spending their lives getting to know their true power are very rich people, even if they live in a loincloth.
What are some ways, you know, you would advise someone who's on his or her journey on discovering their purpose and discovering their true power?
Well, I would say, remember, this is a chapter from the book, but fears are ghost stories. And so I would encourage anyone who wants to become more of their natural genius and someone who wants to own their gifts and talents to understand the power of deliberate discomfort. So literally, it's about practicing what I call micro bravery. Every little day, find something that frightens you or something that makes you feel uncomfortable and force yourself to do it. And here's why. Because a victim is someone who's given away their power to their excuses, which they believe to be true. And the more we release our excuses and do the things we don't want to do and we tell ourselves we can't do, every time we do it, way by practicing deliberate discomfort, we take the power we gave to our fear back. And if you do it every day over months, quarters, years, you're going to become so extraordinarily powerful. So number one, I'd say, remember, fears are ghost stories. Most people have been taught their fears. We adopt our parents' fears, society's fears. And the more we can do difficult things in small steps every day, the more we'll take our power back. Secondly, I'm a big proponent of MVP. And MVP is a term in my methodology for meditation, visualization, and prayer. And people always say, well, how do I become more powerful? That MVP, most valuable player, meditation, visualization, and prayer, those are three extraordinarily powerful tools. I start my morning with an hour of MVP. I meditate, then I visualize, you know, my core projects that I hope will get done over the next few months, and then I pray. I pray to, you know, if you don't believe in God, you can pray to the universe, you can pray to the force that runs the world, you can pray to your highest self, but pray because intentions are powerful and every prayer is heard. So I think that's another tool that I offer to the people that I mentor. And then I'm a big fan of writing in a journal in the morning. And we've heard a lot about it, but I ask myself at least three questions every morning. Number one, where am I winning? Number two, what will I release today? One of the chapters of The Wealth Money Can't Buy is don't be a resentment collector.
Yeah.
And writing about what you'll release today, maybe it's someone you need to forgive, maybe it's someone you're angry about, is very powerful because you release the energy onto paper. And then the third question I ask when I write is, what does my ideal day look like? And that's, I call it a pre-performance paragraph, but writing out a paragraph on my ideal day gives me a lot of intentionality versus being reactive as I go through the day.
I love that so much. And I believe so much too, and echo your thoughts on the power of journaling. And I'm going to adopt what you shared on, you know, daily journaling across the three questions of where am I winning in life? What am I going to release today? And how does my ideal day look like? In your book, you mention also the PENAM principle, P-E-N-A-M. Could you explain to us, you know, what this principle entails and how it can be applied by individuals for us who are striving for growth?
Well, first of all, I have to thank you for doing something that is not so common, Rachel, which is you're very well prepared and you've read the book.
Yes.
And you know, it speaks a lot to you because I think success and mastery is all about going granular in a world where too many people are scratching the surface and looking for superficial answers, having superficial conversations, and thinking and living in superficial ways. And so it sounds so simple to be prepared.
Yeah.
But I just want to celebrate you for your rigor and your respect of your craft. So PENAM is the Wealth Money Can't Buy is based on eight sections based on the eight forms of wealth. And the first section is, as you suggest, the first form of wealth, growth. And one of the chapters is memorize the Penum principle. Penum are the five forces that make you, you, and me, me. If we're wondering, all your viewers from around the world, your listeners, are wondering, well, how do we develop this mindset that we have in this worldview? I would suggest that it comes down to Penum, this acronym, the five forces. P stands for our parents. We adopt the beliefs that the people who taught us how the world works shared with us, our parents, our early caregivers. So if our parents were in scarcity or said, money doesn't grow on trees, I had one billionaire client who said his father taught him all rich people are liars, cheats, and thieves. Imagine what that would do for his prosperity consciousness. So our parents definitely teach us so much about how the world works. That's the first part of the Penum acronym. Second influence that shapes the way we see the world, E, the P, the E in Penum, in our environment. Where we work, how our house looks, the car we drive, or the clothes we wear, the people we follow online, the books we read, all of our environment is subtly shaping how we see the world, whether we become victims or heroes. The N in the Penum acronym, N, our nation. Our nation, like if you grew up in a war-torn country, it's going to shape how we see prosperity or opportunity.
Yeah.
How we interact with people, our sense of safety. If you live in another country, which is a more modern country, maybe a wealthier country, it's definitely going to shape how we operate in the world. P, parents. E, environment. N, nation. A, in Penum, our associations. Mm-hmm. There's a lot in The Wealth Money Can't Buy on the extraordinary power of our association and the importance of releasing victims from our lives. So A is associations. We become our conversations. The people we spend time with show us what's possible. If you want to, let's say, be financially successful, then spend time with people whose lives you want to be living. If you want to be a great artist, then spend time with possibilitarians and people who value their craft. If you want to be a great athlete, then spend time with people who are up at 5 a.m. and they're practicing and they're eating well and they're taking cold plunges and they understand the power of training and studying the tapes. And then M in the Penum acronym is media. And media, more than ever before, infiltrates our mindset, heart set, health set, and soul set.
Yeah.
And every time we check a notification, every time we watch the news, every time we look at an ad, every time we watch an influencer, we are subtly influenced in terms of our thinking and our performance and the way we show up in the world. So the five forces of Penum are very powerful. And the more you understand it, the more you can change and step into your primal genius.
Amazing. And I love that you break it down so succinctly for us as well. And to also be mindful of these aspects of our life that consciously or subconsciously make such a huge impact on us. In the book too, you emphasize the importance of choosing the right partner for one's joy. Can you share a little bit more about this concept and the significance in personal fulfillment?
Sure. So the first form of wealth, we talked a bit about it, which is growth. The second form of wealth is wellness.
Yeah.
So it's that old idea, which is health is the crown on the well person's head that only the ill person can see. And health and wellness is one of those things that we take for granted until we lose it. Most people who are healthy don't wake up and say, I'm so healthy. It's such a blessing. I'm so rich. But if we lose our health, we'll spend most of our days trying to get our health back. So that's the second form of wealth, and there's 20 chapters in the book on that. The third form of wealth in The Wealth Money Can't Buy, you're speaking to it, which is family.
Yeah.
So my partner, Elle, her grandma had her 90th birthday a little while ago.
Wow.
And at her 90th birthday, at her 90th birthday party, I sat her aside, or I found some time to sit down next to her, and I said, Nona, we call her Nona.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you're 90. What's the most important thing you've learned about life? And she didn't say money. She didn't say my stock portfolio. She didn't say social media likes. Nona said what was most important is family.
Wow.
And so the chapter Money Can't Buy that you are speaking about is the chapter called Your Choice of Mate is 90% of Your Joy. And I think that's so true. It's like often we go into a relationship hoping for the best.
Yeah.
But a red flag is a red flag. And often we destroy the best years of our life thinking that a red flag that we see in a potential relationship partner is a green light. And so I've learned that, you know, the person we choose to spend our life with in a long-term relationship definitely is 90% of our joy. And so we need to really think through that decision. And there's another chapter in that section called
I love that. That was such an interesting perspective. Sorry to cut you, I was just too excited. The 10,000 dinners question. Yeah, could you share with us a little bit more about that?
Reading this article about this famed divorce lawyer who works with top footballers, etc. And she was asked, you know, what are your two best relationship strategies? You've seen so many relationships fall apart. And she said, number one, and your listeners might not like it, but I'm just going to share what she said. The lawyer's name is Ayesha Vardag.
Yes.
She's based out of the UK.
UK. Mm.
So she said, and so she said, first of all, she said, have separate bedrooms. And then the second one, she said, ask yourself the 10,000 dinners question. And what that really is she said, ask yourself, do I see myself happily having 10,000 dinners with this person I'm going to get into a long-term relationship with? And we all know this, but, you know, looks fade.
Yeah.
Some of the early lust factors, let's call them, are less important as the relationship advances. And I found this in my lifetime relationship, which I'm in, but really it comes down to an incredible friendship. And if you've got that great friendship, you've got, I think, a really strong basis for a lifetime relationship. So that chapter in the book is on the 10,000 dinners question. I think it's a really smart question to ask ourselves.
Yeah. And also, you know, you discuss in the book the hidden habits of authentically wealthy people. Could you highlight a few of these habits and the impact on personal and professional success?
One of the most important of the hidden habits, and that comes from the fifth form of wealth, which is money. So there, you know, this is not a book about materialism and being a monk on the mountaintop. In that section, it's the fifth form of wealth. I actually deconstruct how the world's wealthiest people actually made their financial fortune. All I'm saying is don't make money your God, make it your servant. And so one of the hidden habits of the world's wealthiest people financially is they are obsessed with value creation. And too many people in business are all about scarcity. You go to their restaurant, for example, and they give you as little food as possible. And the food's not made with love, and the room and it might not be perfectly clean, and they don't treat their employees well.
Yeah.
And there's no real user experience. One of the things I've observed working with many of the top CEOs in the world and leadership teams of FedEx and Microsoft and Starbucks, et cetera, is the best entrepreneurs in the world are not in scarcity. They're all about generosity. And so a really smart question, it's very counterintuitive. And Rachel, it's practiced in the breach. It's not very common. But ask yourself this, how can I give my customers, and I know you have a lot of entrepreneurs who follow you, keep asking yourself this question, how may I best serve the most people? Keep asking yourself this question, I call it the 10x value question. How can I give my customers, my consumers, 10 times the value that they have any right to expect? I mean, on my Instagram, I posted a picture of just some of the manuscripts, the versions of The Wealth Money Can't Buy. I wrote it over the past 12 months.
Yeah.
And in that picture, there's at least 13 different versions of the manuscript. And in each one of those manuscripts, there's probably 10,000 changes. Mm. Why was I so utterly devoted to making this book the best book I've ever done? It'll be up to the readers to determine if it's a good book. But because I have a sacred relationship with my consumers. Mm. Writing books and creating content is personal to me. And so one of the hidden habits of the world's most successful people, many of the people I've worked with, they don't do it for the money. They do it for the pride they feel on a job well done. Mm. And that is part of the wealth money can't buy. Your head hits the pillow. You feel good about what you do in the world. And the irony is, when you like that as an entrepreneur, the world beats a path to your door.
Wow. And you mentioned earlier about, you know, writing this book over 12 months. And in your book, you also mentioned about going ghost for a year. I think that's such an intriguing idea. Can you explain, you know, what it means to go ghost and how can we benefit from such an experience?
Sure. So that's another one of the 8 forms of wealth. Yeah. Craft and seeing your work as a platform for purpose. Again, there's 20 chapters in that section. One of them is going ghost for a year. What's that all about? Well, it's kind of like a challenge to the reader where I'm saying, why don't you pull back from the noise so you can hear the signal? Give yourself a year. If it's not a year, maybe 6 months. If it's not 6 months, maybe 3 months. If it's not 3 months, maybe a month. Where you go dark, you go ghost. I guess what I'm suggesting is, too many of us are spending so much time in the world, we're not pulling back from the noise, so we really don't. So sometimes we fall into the trap of spending our best hours climbing mountains, but maybe they're the wrong ones.
Wow, that really hits home, because I think, you know, one of the quotes that I hold true to is, don't die with the music still inside of you. And I think one of life's greatest purpose is for us to discover why and what we were created exactly for. Robin, you have mentored billionaires, athletes, heads of state. How has the 8 forms of wealth model that you came up with transformed their lives? And what can we as everyday individuals learn from their experiences?
Well, it's transformed the lives of a lot of my clients, because they have fallen, too many of these people have fallen into the trap that many of us have fallen into, which is we are spending our best days. You talked about don't die with your music still within you.
Yeah.
A lot of us are spending our best hours, hours we're never going to get back, chasing these shiny toys of success that our culture says will make you happy. Mm. Popularity, material possessions, lots of money, big houses, yachts, whatever it is. And yet it makes me think of what Jim Carrey said. He said, I wish everyone could be rich and famous to realize it doesn't make a difference. And so what the 8 forms of wealth model has shown people is that money is important. I'd rather stay in a nice hotel room than a dirty old hotel room, you know? Money is important. There's no question. And it is one of the 8 forms of wealth. But the model has shown people that family and wellness and personal growth and craft, and then the 6th form of wealth, which is adventure, and the 7th form of wealth, which is community, and the 8th form of wealth, which is service. Living for a cause that's larger than your own life is an incredible form of wealth that money can't buy. I was in Toronto 2 weeks ago, and I had a long dinner with my parents, who are in their 80s. And we laughed and we talked about some of the moments we've shared together. And I asked my dad, you know, his lessons of life. And I listened to my mom's wonderful stories. And all I'm trying to say is, you know, we ate relatively simply that night. The dinner didn't cost this huge amount of money. But to me, that was a priceless evening with my elderly parents. And we can all find the wealth money can't buy. And it doesn't cost a lot of money. So that's sort of the message that I'm trying to share in the book.
Yeah, and true wealth, like you mentioned, you know, thank you so much for redirecting our attentions to what truly matters in life. What do you think, though, Robin, are some of the biggest obstacles for us in achieving true wealth, and how can we overcome them?
Well, one of the chapters in the book, in the section on personal growth, is the best way to start is to start.
Yeah.
And I mentioned in that chapter, I was being interviewed by this wonderful broadcaster in Dubai, great heart, great energy. And she was like, you know, so okay, great. I love this and I love this and I love that. Great ideas. Where do I start? The best way to start is to start. You know, the Chinese philosopher, I believe it was Lao Tzu, said the 1,000-mile journey begins with the single step. So often what we do is we complicate things because we're scared. We read too many books. We watch too many podcasts. We ask too many questions of too many mentors. Just get in the game. Don't complicate it. Take the first step. You want to write a book? First page. You want to run a marathon? Walk around the block. You want to find new love? Walk up to someone in the spin class and say, how's your day going? It really is that simple, and then maintaining it every single day. Another one of the reasons why we don't continue is we're around the wrong people. Mm-hmm. And we're hearing a lot about that these days, but I think about Nicholas Christakis at Harvard University, and he found some research you might find very interesting. And he found that we become not only our friends, but we model the behavior of the friends of our friends' friends. Wow. I'm going to repeat that again because it was a little complicated when I first learned.
That's third degree association.
We become, not only your circle of friends, but you start to mimic friends' friends, friends of your friends' friends. Nicholas Christakis, Harvard University. And if we had more time, we could get into mirror neurons and the human instinct for mimicry. And when we were on the savannah thousands of years ago, when someone discovered a new tool, we would automatically, through a type of brain cell called a mirror neuron, mimic the tool, which allowed the tribe to survive and the new invention to spread, obviously. Mm. Well, now here we are in the modern age, and we are very sloppy often with the people who we allow ourselves into our circle. And that's why the sixth form of wealth is our community. And I have 20 chapters in The Wealth Money Can't Buy that'll help people release the energy vampires and the dream stealers and bring people in your life who get you and who love you for who you are and who support you. You've got to fill your life with other people who are misfits, oddballs, and eccentrics versus having people who say, you know, oh, I want to start this new business, and they tell you all the reasons why you'll fail, because deep inside they're frustrated about their own potential unexpressed.
Wow. I have so many more questions, Robin, but I want to also be respectful of your time and wrap up, you know, reflecting on the chapter that you wrote about living fully so that we can die empty. What advice would you offer us to, you know, when we seek to live a more purposeful and fulfilling life, ensuring that we leave a meaningful legacy behind?
Well, one of the first things I would say is, you know, death has a bad rap in our world. And what I'm suggesting is the more we can build intimacy with our mortality, the more we will live to the point. And so in that chapter you're referring to, I talk about this Indian Maharaja who would celebrate his own funeral every morning as part of his own morning routine. And that might sound strange, but it's actually very wise, because even in our journaling, if we can remember that, you know, life is can be accidents, life can be illness, life can be emergencies.
Yeah.
Life is incredibly fragile and unexpected. And the more we can build some kind of a discipline as part of our morning routine or pre-sleep ritual that reminds us about how fragile life is. And that even if you live for another 100 years, our days are numbered. The more you can pray and meditate and read about these kinds of things, the shortness of life, the more we won't hold back. You know, I think so much of what we don't do in life is because we're afraid of being rejected. But when we remember that, you know, we're going to be dust someday in the future, we start to live to the point. We start to not worry so much about being laughed at. We start to march to our own drumbeat. We start to listen to that music inside of us, even if the world calls us crazy. And then, Rachel, we start to laugh our own laugh and speak our own voice and do our own dreams, and we start to live a much richer life.
That's beautiful. It's really like living with the end in mind. What's one final piece of advice, Robin, that you have for us?
Well, I would say to everyone watching or listening, please remember that wealth comes in seven other forms aside from money and financial wealth. And so let's not be seduced into thinking that we need to make all this money to be happy. You know, happiness comes in the other forms of wealth, family and wellness and service and pursuing a craft and adventure. And once we follow all of these eight forms of wealth that the wealth money can't buy is based on, no matter who you are, you live a much richer life. And that's really part of the name of the game.
I love that. Thank you so much, Robin. Where can we find you? And where can we find out more about the book that's going to be released in April this year? I personally can't wait to get my hands on copies of it to give away to the people around me.
So, anyone who wants the book can go to thewealthmoneycan'tbuy.com, thewealthmoneycan'tbuy.com. And I'm excited to share that website because when they pre-order the book from that website or order from the website, they're going to get a three-hour virtual summit with me if they pre-order, and 10 meditations and all of these really wonderful bonus gifts for pre-ordering. And obviously, they can also get the book at bookstores in April. It comes down April the 9th, across the UK and across the world, and online wherever great books are sold. So, you know, and I just want to thank you for you know, all the people that you're influencing. And I know from what I've watched of you and heard about you and learned of you, you do your work with great integrity and great care. And I look at the audiences you have, and people really, they really seem to love you. And that, you know, you're bringing a light to a lot of people. And I think our world needs a lot of light. So I just want to celebrate you for the work you're doing as well.